Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Empowering Family Caregivers on Blog Talk Radio. I am Susan Bida, your host and co-founder of eCareDiary.com, a free website devoted to helping caregivers manage their loved ones' care. Since our first show in June, we've brought you authors, a bioethicist, and experts on health reform and aging technology. I'm actually amazed by how fast our audience is growing, and thank you for tuning in. To listen to any of our past radio shows, visit our website, www.ecarediary.com, under blogs, and click on Blog Talk Radio. Today, we bring you our very first medical professional, Jane Meyer Hamilton. I first met Jane at the Aging in America conference in Chicago. She is incredibly bright and one of the busiest people I know. Jane has a master's degree in nursing and is a registered nurse for 35 years. And within that time, she was also a family caregiver for 20 years. She has not only practiced clinically, but she's also taught psychiatric nursing. She even co-authored a book called Survival Skills for the New Nurse. Through her consulting firm, she first addressed the needs of healthcare professionals and later expanded her practice to include caring for family caregivers. Today, she is the founder of a nonprofit called Partners on the Path, and that website is www.partnersonthepath.org. She is also the author of a new book called Journey of a Lifetime, The Caregiver's Guide to Self-Care, to help both professional and family caregivers preserve their health, well-being, and capacity to care. I can't think of someone more qualified to advise caregivers on how to preserve their physical and mental well-being. We are so proud to have her on our team of experts on eCareDiary.com, where she will be contributing monthly. So, Jane, it is an honor to have you on our show.
Well, thank you, Susan, so much. I'm honored to be with you and delighted to have an opportunity to talk about what caregivers need.
So, Jane, you've been a registered nurse for 35 years,
mm-hmm.
and you've taught nurses.
Yes.
And for our audience of family caregivers out there who sometimes feel that they have to take on the role of a nurse,
right.
Tell us what it's like. Tell us what it's like to be a professional nurse, and what issues did you face?
Well, I have been a caregiver really since childhood, from taking care of my little sister to babysitting. You know, there's something in me that is compassionate, and I can feel what other people feel. And so I was drawn to nursing early on, and I get a very special sense of joy and fulfillment from being able to help other people. And I think for family caregivers who feel like they're taking on that role of nurse, I think there's some similarities there in that we feel what our loved one feels and want to be able to help them. And the issues, I think, for me that I faced is this issue of being able to keep my compassion and my sense of a positive feel about helping others, and not to be overwhelmed or worn down by the problems that they experience and get a sense of burnout or develop illnesses myself from giving.
Mm-hmm. And as a professional nurse, I mean, you're dealing with a lot of different patients. Is that
right.
Is that quite typical? Is burnout pretty typical in the nursing profession?
Well, it does happen to a lot of people in the helping professions. Anybody who really is facing somebody who is suffering or in pain or disabled or having traumatic experiences, they can be worn down by being part of and present to the suffering of other people, and it's something that professionals need to be cautious of. And I think family caregivers also can become worn down by giving and caring and observing the difficulties that their loved ones go through.
Sure. So, well, let's talk about that a little bit, because you were a caregiver for 20 years to numerous family members, and I know at one point you were not only caring for your husband, but also your mom and your dad all at the same time, and I believe you are a parent to children. You have two children,
one,
I believe.
One child, one son.
One child, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So how were you able to manage working, caring for them, caring for your child, and then caring for yourself?
Well, there were a lot of balls in the air. I'm like many caregivers, and we all have a lot of things that we're juggling in our personal and work lives, and then caregiving is sort of added to it. I think a part of what helped me to get through was that my husband's illness was really the one that had the most daily impact on my life. My parents lived in Chicago, and I was a long-distance caregiver to them, so I wasn't caring for them day in and day out. My sister was the primary caregiver there. So the blessing of the situation was that they were not all right here in my household every day. But even with them far away, you know, we're tied by a bond of love and affection, and I worried about them, and I worried about my sister, who was working so hard to take care of them and keep all the things happening in her life. So it was a lot of mental strain, and I think really the major thing that helped me get through was what I knew about self-care and what I had been teaching nurses about since 1980. I'd been teaching stress management and self-care. And so I just really focused on making sure that I practiced what I preached, and I walked, you know, several times a week, and I prayed, and I would write in my journal. Sometimes I wrote essays and stories about what the experience was like for me, and that writing was very therapeutic. And of course, I had a lot of friends, and my sister and I were very close. My husband and I stayed very close. And, you know, I tried to use all of those things that I know as self-care can make a difference.
Absolutely.
And I think two other things I did was that I kept my work at part-time, and I'm fortunate enough that I didn't have to work full-time, but I had a son who was a little boy, and he really needed me when his father was really not well. Mm-hmm. And so I just knew that my priority was raising a healthy son and keeping my marriage and my health in balance. So I let go of some things, and that helped me to get through too.
Jane, do you mind sharing what your husband was afflicted with?
No, actually, he had an injury to his knee, and literally a tire swing hit the side of his knee when my son was four and we were over at the playground together, and he developed a chronic pain syndrome that came on just immediately as soon as he got hit by that tire swing, and
his leg
never stopped hurting for 7 years.
Oh my goodness.
We went through this long, arduous diagnostic process, and it was a fairly newly discovered condition, and he had, you know, multiple nerve blocks and this and that and the next to relieve the pain, and thank goodness he's not in pain anymore. But it was so uncertain and long and arduous and frightening.
Oh my!
Yeah.
Well, that's an I can imagine how tough that might have been for him to get around physically, and then you're essentially not only working but also managing the care of your son and sure the household and all that. So
yeah,
that
we had just moved into a fixer upper, and oh my goodness, so here we are in this fixer upper, and he can't even move around. It was awful. And that's what happens when we get into caregiving situations.
Absolutely.
The things come up, and we just don't know what to do next, and it's hard.
So, Jane, why don't we talk now about Partners and the Path and your new book. What inspired both the creation of this wonderful nonprofit and the subject of your book?
Well, I think clearly you can see that I had a very intense caregiving experience in struggling with my husband's pain for all those years. And I became aware that not only nurses and healthcare professionals experience stress in being a caregiver, but I began to experience firsthand that family members do as well. And the seed of the idea to do something for family caregivers also grew from that experience.
Sure.
I wanted to take this situation that was painful and really, I think, transform it into something that was positive. And my sister Wendy, who was the person in Chicago taking care of my parents,
yes.
I used to call her and talk to her, and we would share our trials and tribulations. And when she came to the end of that, she said to me, "You know, you really should write something and give to other people what you've given to me over all these years." And she really kind of got me thinking that maybe I should do that.
You know, I'm not sure what profession Wendy's in, but I have to say she was very lucky to have you, because I'm sure many families out there wish they had, you know, a medical professional in their family to answer some questions, I'm sure, that often comes up. And
she did actually, Susan, she did say to me, "Oh, my gosh, I mean, I could not have gotten through this without you." And we were partners with each other. And actually, the title for my business, Partners on the Path, in part comes from that, realizing that caregivers are partners to the person who is ill or disabled. And in their partnering, they're giving their energy, and they need caregivers need partners to walk that journey of caregiving too, so that they can make it through in a healthy way without undermining and eroding their own health. And so I picture my business as a partner on the path of caregiving with caregivers.
That makes such perfect sense, because I think oftentimes when we become caregivers to someone who is infirm, the assumption is that they become our child, or we're caring for them, and
mm-hmm.
so we, you know, it's not a, it's, you know, and I think this is a very good reminder that it is a partnership, and that particularly with an aging parent or an elderly relative, they still are very much a part of how their life is managed.
Well, exactly, and we don't, I prefer not to take over another person's life and say, "This is how you'll do it." Sometimes it feels like we're the parents to our parents when they're not well. And
right.
we take on making decisions that prior to this experience they would have made on their own.
Right.
So there's a subtle shift in that balance of power. And so that role seems parental, but I think the more we can think of parenting, the more we have that balance that honors the dignity of the care receiver and recognizes the limits that I have as the caregiver.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, Jane, there's so much to talk about at your book, and I actually want to focus in on your psychiatric nursing background
mm-hmm.
for a second here. How has your training in psychiatry influenced your work to help caregivers?
Oh, I think this is a big root of what I have brought forth in the book. I got a master's degree in psychiatric nursing, and while I was studying, the teachers taught me about the importance of preventing mental illness, not just treating it, of the importance of building people's skills to cope in a healthy way with stress so that they can maintain their health and ability to function. And I loved that idea of prevention. It seems so such a wise use of energy, and for some reason that's just what I've always been interested in my work. And so when I looked at the caregiving experience my sister and I had, I realized that caregivers are, you know, we're just normal, healthy people dealing with an incredibly stressful situation. And so I wanted to help people maintain themselves while they're going through this experience.
I have to thank you for your interest and focus on prevention, because oftentimes, and we've talked about it on this show, how, I mean, John and I both feel healthcare today seems very reactionary, and
mm-hmm.
I love the fact that our country is now, and the medical profession in our country is now trying to shift towards more of a preventative focus.
Because the prevention gets us before we fall apart, and it's so much more wise in its use of our healthcare resources and our human energy, and I love it. And I'm hoping more people are going to focus on this too.
Okay, well let's talk about some of the main causes of caregiver stress, which you discuss in your book, and I
mm-hmm.
love the way you actually lay out information in your book. If you don't mind my saying so, love the way you include, for example, your story by saying Jane's story at the beginning of each chapter, and then you offer a lot of lists and exercises and really good content in terms of how to manage all these different things that might happen as you're going through the caregiving process. So tell us a little bit about the causes of caregiver stress.
Well, thank you, first of all, for that compliment that you liked the way the book is laid out. I feel that the idea of telling my story says to caregivers, I know what it's like to be a caregiver, and then the recommendations are designed to give people sound, well-researched information, but information that can be used in people's lives today. And the causes of caregiver stress, which I outline in my book, are most broadly the responsibilities of the role of being a caregiver and how it impacts on our life. More specifically, stress comes from the actual work of caregiving, my lack of skill or confidence, the difficulty I have in handling care, the 24/7 nature of giving care, or the uncertainty about where to get help. The stress also comes from basically just the condition of the person who's receiving care, the suffering and the decline that we witness, or how complex and long-term illnesses and infirmities can be, and that they get worse over time, and the outcomes are uncertain, and the stress also comes from relationships, the what's going on inside of the person receiving care? Are they negative? Are they in conflict with me? Are there emotional outbursts, or are they refusing my help? And also, I think the stress comes from really within me as the caregiver. I mean, physically, I can experience stress just from being fatigued and having problems with my sleep or
sure.
having my own health problems, but I can also feel some stress from the sense of isolation from other people. I feel alone with this burden or in conflict with my family and friends about how to take care of my mother, or I feel sad or pessimistic or overwhelmed. So
sure.
There are lots and lots of stress, but it comes from the nature of the caregiving role and how it affects my life.
Now, you touch on symptoms that
mm-hmm.
show caregiver is under stress, and I'm really interested in some of the ones that you identify. And then I'm also interested in what are the most common stress-related illnesses for caregivers, because I'm seeing, you know, as someone who's in this field with you, you know, in elder
uh-huh.
care,
uh-huh.
hear these unbelievable stories about illnesses that caregivers are undergoing while they're
uh-huh.
in the midst of caring for someone who's completely dependent on them.
Right. And I think if listeners remember nothing, I want you all to remember that caregiving over time is a chronic source of stress, and the medical research proves that there is a mind-body connection within each of us as human beings, and that when we're exposed over a prolonged period of time to stress, it erodes our immune system, and our ability to defend against illnesses is eroded, and we become ill. There is research that shows this, and so it's absolutely critical that we not dismiss that or diminish it or deny it. It is real, and we all have physical bodies that will show the wear and tear of stress, and we need to do things to take care of our bodies. The symptoms of stress are warning signals. They're like a light flashing or a bell ringing that's saying, watch out, watch out, watch out. You're coming to the end of your ability to adapt, and if you don't do something, you're going to get sick. It's like coming to the edge of a cliff, and the warning signals are telling us we're going to fall off the edge of the cliff, and when we do, we become ill. So the symptoms fall into any or all of the six aspects of a human life that we all have. We're holistic beings. That's the way the literature describes us. And so if people can think about the fact that, picture a six-pointed star, and each point has reflects a quality of us. We're physical, we're emotional, we're mental, social, occupational, and spiritual. And the symptoms show up in any of those six parts of ourselves, and they warn us that we need to take care of ourselves. The more symptoms you have, the clearer the warning. And I think what's important, when you say what are the most common stress-related illnesses, I think what's important to know is each of us is a unique human being, and we have a different constellation of symptoms, and we will likely have different illnesses that show up in us based on our own personal weaknesses. So,
sure.
Like if somebody tends to get allergies, or another person tends to get backaches, or another person gets migraines, or another person gets upset stomach, we have different symptoms, and we have different illnesses that are typically ours, and it's important for us to be self-aware, to recognize the symptoms that show I'm under stress, and recognize the illnesses that show up if I don't pay attention.
Right, and of course, many of us are prone to certain illnesses
mm-hmm.
that probably, and probably some of these symptoms are magnified under the stress of caregiving.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to actually bring up a couple of examples of some things, and I really would be very interested in your opinion and reaction to this.
Mm-hmm.
I've now heard numerous stories from people who have written me directly about how they either have contracted some type of cancer. In one instance, it's my own family example.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle, who was caring for my 92-year-old grandfather, who has severe dementia, completely
mm-hmm.
stressed out by caring for him, all the
mm-hmm.
financial aspects,
mm-hmm.
finding him nursing homes, et cetera, dealing with not to mention the family drama of
mm-hmm.
caring for my grandfather.
Oh, yes.
He was just diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. He has three massive tumors in the center of his body. He could no longer continue caring for my grandfather, and now that responsibility has been passed to another member of my family. In another situation, a woman wrote to me directly about her diagnosis with breast cancer. She's currently being treated. And this was after 2 years of intensely caring for four elderly relatives.
Mm.
And I'm beginning to feel like, oh, my God, you know, I think, you know, obviously in both these instances, the caregivers, I think, were feeling very isolated, and I also think that they did try to get some help, but at the end of the day, they bore a lot of the burden of the work of caregiving, and I'm wondering, is there a connection between stress and cancer?
I think that the research shows that there is this mind-body connection that is a factor in our health or our development of illnesses. I don't feel as a professional that I could say that I'm in a position to comment on any person's diagnosis. But what I can tell you is that there has been some very good research on the impact of long-term caregiving responsibilities on people's health, and particularly caregivers of those with dementia. And there is, they show that this is very, very hard on a person's physical well-being. And some studies have shown a connection with the development of hypertension and diabetes and depression and other chronic illnesses. So, you know, Susan, I think there is something that in my rational mind says, you know, that we need to do all we can to bolster our immunity, because when immunity is eroded, we do develop illnesses.
You know, Jane, let's start talking about managing stress, and
mm-hmm.
and what ways do you recommend managing stress in a healthy way in your book?
Well, I think just sort of a thumbnail sketch, mm-hmm. I would say to listeners, picture that book you used to read to your children, The Little Engine That Could. You know, I think I can, I think I can. The little engine sees this challenge and rises to meet it. And that image, I think, sort of encapsulates a very quick thumbnail sketch of what we need to do to manage our stress in a healthy way. First and foremost, we need to see that challenge. We need to recognize that this caregiver role can be extremely stressful and demanding, as you described in your two scenarios just a few moments ago. If we don't recognize that, that sets us up to be at risk for isolation and for development of illnesses. So recognize the stress of the caregiver role. Number two, believe that self-care is good. It's positive, it's necessary, and it makes you a better caregiver and a healthier person.
And it's not selfish.
It's not selfish. We need to give ourselves permission to say that if I take care of myself, I strengthen myself so I can continue to care for other people. I cannot give what I don't have to give. You know, that's what they say on the airport, on the airlines. Put on your oxygen mask first before trying to help another person.
Right.
That's what self-care is. That's what stress management for caregivers involves. And we need, thirdly, to act. We need to do something every single day. Small, regular practices that help us relax, feel good, let go of our worries, take a break. Anything that we do to take care of those parts of our body, the physical, emotional, intellectual, social, occupational, and spiritual, those six parts, anything we do in a small way on a regular basis is a high leverage activity that will help to preserve our wellness.
You know, thank you, Jane, for pointing this out, these three points out, because
mm-hmm.
I think it seems obvious, but I think you can really get sucked in to the,
yes.
the everyday tasks and forget
yes.
about all these things. So thank you for emphasizing that.
You're welcome.
Now, there's something in your book you talk a lot about ways in which to manage, and you also elaborate on visualization.
Mm.
Can you talk about it, how it helped you and how it can help caregivers?
Yeah, visualization is one of those things that doesn't cost any money and it doesn't take a lot of time, but it is a powerful way to use your mind as a healing agent. Visualization is what's called daydreaming with a positive purpose. You can create visual pictures to either, number one, help relieve stress, number two, overcome some things that are obstacles, or number three, to sort of reprogram your mind to be more optimistic. An example of when I used visualization was in my life when I needed to get together with my family and have a serious discussion about caring for my mother after my father died. And this discussion had to be held after my father's funeral, and we had had a huge blow-up after my father's funeral, I'm sorry to report. And my sister was going to be the caregiver on the scene, and my brother and I were going to be leaving to return to our distant homes. And so I needed to sort of get my courage up to be able to handle that constructively. And so I practiced visualization to get me to picture myself walking into that difficult situation and coping with it in a constructive way. So if your listeners want to do visualization, there are four important things that help visualization to be effective. One, you have to have a vivid picture, all five senses, sight, hearing, taste, touch, smell, all of those go into creating a picture. That second of all has a strongly positive tone to it. I couldn't imagine myself going in and losing it with my brother and sister. I had to picture myself going in and handling it constructively and having a smooth conversation and reaching agreement in a respectful way. So I had to be positive. The third element of a visualization is that it has to be in a present tense, like it's happening to me right now. So I had to envision myself currently standing in the room, walking into the room with all of them and sitting down and like in right now. And then the fourth element was to repeat it over and over. And so before I went to that discussion, I had to sort of sit quietly and get this picture in my mind, and I repeated it several times in the days before I went to do that. And the trick here is that our subconscious mind doesn't know what's real in real time and space. But if we think of it and really powerfully envision it as real, we're planting the seed of that healthy, positive, strong image into ourselves so that subconsciously we start to respond as if this is true. And it does bring about positive outcomes.
Jane, this is really wonderful. Thank you for explaining how that works. And I want to just interrupt a second here and say that we have gone over our 30-minute time limit, but if you have the time, I certainly have the time to keep going.
Sure.
And I just want to let the audience know that we have about, I would say, an additional maybe 5 to 10 minutes left to go. I think that what you're conveying and what you're sharing with us is so important that I'm taking the liberties of going over our normal 30-minute show.
That's fine.
Let me go on to the next question, which is, you talk a lot about the stages of caregiving.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I recently read Gail Sheehy's book, which is called Passages in Caregiving, and she describes the 8 turnings or phases of caregiving.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us what are your stages of caregiving, and why should caregivers know about these, and how are they different from what Gail Sheehy has described?
Well, you know, she's written a wonderful book, and I think she and I are both coming from the same place. Interestingly enough, she was inspired by The Labyrinth, and Walking the Labyrinth is a part of what inspired me to come up with the term Partners on the Path for my business. So that it was really, I think, a sign from the universe that she and I are on the same path. And I think both of our models, whether she talks about her 8 universal turns or I describe 6 stages of caregiving, and there are other authors who have written about the stages of caregiving as well using different terms. But I think we all agree that these help the caregiver to understand and find ways to cope with the experience of caregiving. We may use different titles, but we're all talking, she and I were both talking about this emphasis on the fact that caregiving affects all aspects of our life. We need to be completely aware of what's going on. We need to be very active in solving problems and taking care of ourselves and obtaining the resources that will help us to live in a healthy way. She emphasizes very much the need to connect strongly with others, and I am completely with her on that one. And she talks about things to do at every turn, and I talk about things to do at every stage to help the care receiver and also to help ourselves. I think what I do in my book is I focus in a very specific way on the internal, very personal, emotional, spiritual ways to nurture oneself as throughout the caregiving journey. So I see us as complementary, her Great. Book and mine, yeah.
Jane, you know, there was this one story that I absolutely loved in your book. It was called Carrots, Eggs, or Coffee. Can you share this with our audience?
Oh, sure. Well, one time when I was really at a low point in my caregiving journey, my sister Wendy sent me an email, one of those stories that circulate on the web, author unknown, and it just somehow spoke to me, like she had written it for me. And so in the story, a young woman goes to talk with her mother and share how hard her life is. She doesn't know what she's going to do to make it. She wants to give up. She's just tired of struggling. And for her, it seemed like one problem was solved and a new one popped up like whack-a-mole or something. So the girl's mother took her to a kitchen. She filled three pots with water and put them on the stove to boil. And in one pot, she put carrots. In the second, she put eggs. And in the last one, she put coffee. The mother let them sit and boil without saying a word for about 20 minutes, and then at the end of that time, she turned off the burners and fished out the carrots to put in a bowl and removed the eggs, and then she poured the steaming aromatic coffee into this big, large mug. And she turned to her daughter, and the mother said, "What do you see?" And the daughter says, "Carrots, eggs, and coffee," you know, wondering, well, what is my mother trying to do here? And the mother asked the daughter to feel the carrots, peel the egg, and sip the coffee. And then she finally revealed the meaning in her odd little exercise and by saying that each of the objects had faced some adversity by being put in the boiling water, but each had reacted differently. And so she explains that the carrot went in strong and firm and unrelenting, but after being subjected to boiling water, it softened and became weak. The egg, she said, had been fragile with a thin outer shell protecting its soft, fluid interior, but like the carrot, the egg was changed by the boiling water, but the egg's soft interior was hardened. But the mother pointed out coffee was unique in that it alone had changed the water in which it had been boiled and turned it into something really quite wonderful. So the story ends when she asks her troubled daughter, "Which are you? In the face of adversity, will you wilt and go soft like the carrot? Will your fluid spirit turn hard? Or like the coffee beans, will you release the potential within you and turn the boiling waters of your life into something you savor?" And so, you know, as caregivers, wow, we all need to answer that question. What are you made of? You know, faced with adversity, are we going to be like the carrot or eggs or coffee and have the energy and judgment and grace to persevere with caregiving?
That is such a powerful story. I'm so glad you shared that because it really touched me, and I'm so glad that we have the time to share that.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
I want to ask you one or two more questions,
okay,
and then we'll conclude. You know, there's also a moment in your book where you talk about disappointment. And, of course, this is part of the adversity. I mean, we experience disappointment when we're going through caregiving, and we're disappointed by even our own family and friends.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about going AWOL when you needed the most during, I think, the hardest times of your experience. Can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, caregiving was long and unpredictable and really deeply, deeply distressing. And I was exhausted by it. And I had a couple of friends and family members who sort of checked out. I think it was overwhelming to them. I think they didn't want to hear how pained I was. I think they didn't know what they could do. And so, you know, they were needing to protect themselves, and so they withdrew from me, and I was furious, I have to tell you. I mean, I was really, and I obsessed about it, and I was really undone. And the thing for me, Susan, is that as a psychiatric nurse, it's my job to be able to talk well with people and help them work out their troubles. But when I was at my most vulnerable, I couldn't do it. I either was into a silent withdrawal mode or I got into these sort of outbursts of fury, and neither of those really was very helpful. And you know, ultimately, you know, I couldn't make them give me what I wanted, and they didn't. And I just spent a long time, lots of years and buckets of tears, just, you know, struggling through that. And I figured out that when people are tapped out and overcommitted, no matter how much I wailed and bemoaned it, that didn't change them. And ultimately, I got to the point where I realized I had to let it go, and that's when I came up with, you can't get juice from an empty pitcher. And literally, it took me years to come to that. And if I can help anybody recognize the need to not waste your energy on the people who won't give you what you need, I will have... that experience will have had some meaning then.
And you end your book on the note of on the note of community and connecting with others. Tell us about that.
Well, the literature is just filled with information that if you connect with your community, your supporters, your family and friends who help you, it helps reduce stress and make you more resilient and have a stronger immune system and a better perspective. So I came up with an image that we need to picture people around us like a well-stocked refrigerator. And I have 8 suggestions. Do you want me to tell you
what they
are? Number 1 is open the door, because what's automatic with food, we often forget about support. Getting fed starts with our choice to get fed. Second, we need to feed ourselves. When we're hungry, we go to the fridge and we get something to eat. We don't wait for others to guess what we need. So it's important that we ask for others for help in a direct way, and we need to be direct about it. So the third thing is we need to feast on healthy food and on treats. You know, sometimes we need a full meal, but sometimes we just want dessert. So we need to look for both real-time help, but also some fun to relax.
Absolutely.
And the number 4, I say to people, let others feed you. Don't always try to do things yourself. Graciously accept help in whatever form is given. And if it's difficult, just remember how great you feel when you help others. So be gracious. And
I love your food metaphor, by the way.
Do you? Yeah. Well, here's number 5. The food one is choose dependable brands. I think about salad dressing and ice cream. You know, some brands deliver the goods better than others. And the same with people. You know, avoid people who make you feel guilty for needing help.
Yeah.
And then look for milk in a milk carton. Go to people who have the energy to give you what you need. And don't go to the empty pitchers. If people don't have something because they're tapped out or overcommitted, you're not going to get it. So don't waste your energy there. And number eight, the final one, is to restock the refrigerator. When your fridge is empty, you go to the store and fill it back up. So we need to give something back to people who support us in the form of thanks or asking about their life or treating them with respect, keeping commitments, or apologizing, you know, if we've done something to hurt or offend others. Community is critical.
Sure is. And Jane, thank you so much. This has been absolutely wonderful to have you and to share
your
expertise. Let me tell the audience about your book and where they can find it. You can purchase Jane's new book, Journey of a Lifetime, The Caregiver's Guide to Self-Care, on Amazon.com, and it's also in the shopping section of eCareDiary.com. To learn more about Jane's organization, Partners on the Path, visit www.partnersonthepath.org. Let me spell that out, partnersonthepath.org. I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in, and join us next time on Monday, August 30th at 2 p.m. Eastern, when Dale Carter, an elder care advocate, author, speaker, and coach, will be our guest. And she'll be here to discuss her book, Transitioning Your Aging Parent, A Five-Step Guide Through Crisis and Change. To learn more about eCare Diary's free online calendar and management tools, visit eCareDiary.com. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. My Twitter address is eCareDiarySusan. I always love making new friends. Thank you, Jane, for being on our show, and thank you to our audience. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Susan. Bye.